I'm going to call this meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Today is Thursday, May 6th. The time is 8:04. Members present helping us make a quorum this morning: Representative Potkatak, Representative Drummond, Representative McCabe, Co-Chair Shragi, and myself, Representative Hannon. We have a quorum to conduct business, and I'd like to thank the House Records Secretary Lori Rowland and our LIO moderator Kelsey Riker for assisting in the committee process this morning. Stephanie Andrew will be our committee aide, and I'll remind everyone in the room to please silence their cell phones. Today we have our second presentation and hearing on House Resolution 8, a resolution creating the House Task Force on Poverty and Opportunity, sponsored by Representative Tarr. We have two amendments for consideration today, and then we'll move on to public testimony. Will the bill's sponsor, Representative Tarr, and her staff, David Song, please join us at the table? And before we get her started, let me say that Representative McCarty showed up at 8:05.
Good morning.
Good morning. The floor is yours.
Well, good morning. I'm Representative Tarr.
David Song, staff to Representative Tarr.
Thank you for the opportunity to come before you a second time, and I'm excited that it's almost a full committee because the first time a couple people I think weren't here. And I think our interest in working on this resolution and then trying to bring together a group of people is the knowledge that across the state there are Alaskans struggling, and that was really made obvious by the COVID-19 pandemic. And so this is a group of people. This idea was brought to us by RuralCap. Of course, they do a lot of service delivery in Alaska and are very much on the front lines of seeing, you know, impacts to families and particularly children. And so we thought, you know, if there are Alaskans willing to come together and contribute their time in this way, donate their time to help develop some ideas, I believe that there are things that we could do that would be more efficient use of the dollars that we spend and improve outcomes. And at this time of, you know, constrained budgets, I think that's a major priority. So I really appreciate the opportunity to bring this before you. And I was thinking specifically of Representative McCabe and Representative Petkutuk, because sort of there's urban and rural issues, and sometimes a little bit different. But, you know, we know in rural areas, for example, just the cost of energy, right? Things like that, cost of goods can, you know, almost outprice living in those areas. So what are the sort of strategic ways that we might rethink our service delivery or program delivery in a way that can overcome, you know, people being in, you know, desperate situations and then also provide more opportunity? Thank you.
Great. Any other opening comments or concerns? All right. We did receive two amendments to the resolution. Members will find them on their desks. I'll entertain a motion from either the maker of the motion.
So moved, Madam Chair. Amendment number one.
Amendment number one by Representative Potkatak. I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Representative Potkatak, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. As our discussion was yesterday, and I offered it, I guess, conceptually, but didn't really offer it, all it does is separate out the affiliation between tribal governments and tribal nonprofits and having two members from that and then two members from INCSA corporations, just understanding that they play two totally different roles in the village as part of the economics. And then further down, when it speaks to the 15,000 resident threshold between municipalities, just making sure that the two members aren't from the same municipality so that we can get that regional or geographical diversity involved. And that's pretty much all the amendment does.
All right. Representative McCarty.
Through the chair, can I get a define which one is Amendment 1 and which one is Amendment 2? Because my copy doesn't say 1 or 2.
Okay, 32 dash, so up in the top right corner, LS
okay, just follow
0728 B dot B point 1.
Thank you.
We're going to call that Amendment 1. Further discussion, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a very good amendment. It does make a lot of distinctions. However, I'm curious about the The numbers of tribal governments or tribal nonprofits in the state, as opposed to the number of corporations formed under the under ANCSA. What are those two? How many tribal governments or tribal nonprofits are there, and how many ANCSA corporations are there?
And Madam Co-Chair,
Representative,
I don't have the exact numbers, but I do know that, you know, obviously there's 12 regional corporations, and then, for example, within the North Slope Borough, which is the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation area, there are 8 village corporations. And then collectively there are 8 tribal organizations per village, and then we have a regional tribal government. So it's equal as far as the North Slope Borough is concerned. But to be able to speak to the rest of the state, I wouldn't be able to. But under ANCSA, you know, every region was chartered to create a corporation, and then subsequently the village corporations, and then tribal. Creation of the tribal organizations is based on, from what I understand, the Indian Reorganizational Act of 1934. So that's what existed before the land settlement and all of that happened. So I don't have the exact numbers, but I know that play two different roles in, you know, village or region economics, and that's why I thought it was important to have that distinction. So
follow up.
Representative Drummond.
What happened to the 13th Regional Corporation?
The 13th Regional Corporation, from what I understand, represents the people that, you know, original Alaska indigenous people that weren't in the state upon the time of the land settlement. And so it was just to provide them representation with what monies was coming from the federal government at the time that ANCSA was passed. So I don't know what is up with the 13th Regional Corporation. From what I understand, they don't have any lands, so.
Follow up. So does this, does this amendment give the 13th Regional an opportunity to be one of those members, to have a representation?
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative?
Yes, to respond, any corporation formed under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act would have that, and the 13th Regional Corporation was formed under there. And part of the reason I was thinking of this amendment was because I've sat on the Village Corporation Board, and I've learned a lot about the Regional Corporation Board, and the Regional Corporation is nationwide, even international to that point. And the Village Corporation that I got to sit in on was more local. So just two different, you know, even between the Regional Corporation and the Village Corporation level, just two different levels of economics there also. So, yes, any corporation formed under ANCSA, as worded, it would allow two members to be a part of this task force.
I'll pass on a follow-up for now.
Other discussion? Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Chair Hannon. Maybe it's not to the amendment itself, but I'm curious of the definition of the word municipality. So there's a number of municipalities, such as my area, that have no government.
So I'm going to have you hold that.
Okay. I'm good with that.
So that we're sticking to the amendment as we...
Right.
And then when...
Well, it's sort of germane to the amendment because I'd like to vote for the amendment, but I need to know...
Okay. Go ahead.
I need to know what the definition of a municipality is. Does it assume there's a government associated, or is it just a local area, such as the, you know, the Kinnick-Fairview area is considered a municipality for population purposes. It has 17,000 people in it. Doesn't really have a government other than Wasilla. So could somebody that lived in Kinnick-Fairview or one of the smaller sort of city or municipalities that doesn't have a government be, I'm just curious how that plays into it all.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know there is a definition, and I'm just seeing if I can find it quickly, for municipality, and it might take me a moment, and I apologize that I did not have that handy, but I know that it's pretty broadly defined. I'm sorry, I will find it if we just take one moment.
And Madam Co-Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Pachacutec.
And as far as the language of the amendment, I was mimicking the language in the original resolution, but if we had to, I guess we could potentially go to a political subdivision of the state versus mm-hmm. a municipality.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll leave that up to.
Thank you. But I do believe municipality is defined in our statutes about organizing governments. Representative Tarr.
Yes, so I believe this is the correct statutory reference, section 01-10-060 definitions. This is general definitions, residency, and rules of statutory construction. So in the laws of the state, unless the context otherwise requires, and it's number 4, municipality means a political subdivision incorporated under the laws of the state that is a home rule or general law city, a home rule or general law borough, or a unified municipality. And so I'm just trying to remember, I think the other ones are considered home rule if they're not otherwise organized. So I do think it's pretty broad to cover that. And that's just come up in other bills before, so that's why it's in my memory, and I hope I'm getting it right.
Representative McCabe.
So follow up, and I appreciate the indulgence, Madam Co-Chair. So in this case, I'm looking at a population of Wasilla of being 10,000 people, municipality of Wasilla with a government. But if you include Kinnick Fairview, now all of a sudden it's 27,000. So there's a sort of a little issue here. I think I know what you're trying to get at. And I'm not sure that Wasilla would fit under what you're trying to get at, is sort of my point. So, I'm in favor of the amendment as written. I just wanted to have a little clarification on that.
Well, and just, this committee, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, does officially sit as the local governing structure of the unorganized boroughs and unorganized lands of Alaska. What we find within that, and you're speaking to, is Wasilla is, a first-class home rule city, and so is Palmer, but you don't have a municipal government in the Kinnick. They would still be within the Mat-Su borough government,
mm-hmm.
and so people could still represent that larger municipal.
Okay, thanks.
That's how I would read it, mm-hmm. and we haven't got too much in city formation this session.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Pachacutec.
Madam Co-Chair, just to follow up on a previous discussion with Representative Drummond, 13 regional corporations, over 200 village corporations, and legitimately listed 229 federally recognized tribes. So I think it's fair to break the distinction between the two because they're pretty well balanced.
Okay. Other discussion on the amendment? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate Representative Pachacutec's clarification. I thought that there were upwards of 220 federally recognized tribes, and I believe there's a bill moving through the legislature for the state to recognize those tribes. I kind of feel that the tribal governments, because there are so many of them, should have more representation on this task force, and I would propose a friendly amendment that line 3.
Which page?
On the amendment number one. This amendment to the amendment number 1. Line 3, change the word 2 to 3, and line 4, change the word 2 to 1.
Representative Pachacutec, make the original motion, the original amendment. What do you?
I respect the intent of it, and I guess the only thing that I would argue is that if one's going to get opportunity, I think the other one should have that equal opportunity, and that's just because of the understanding that I have of what each plays in the village economics. So, for example, back home, a lot of the tribes don't have land access, and that's what the ANCSA corporations were set up for, was to provide a pro-capitalist avenue for the native population at the time to try to do their own economic development projects, and then that's why they were entitled some land. So I think I like it, and you know, I like giving a third seat to the tribally recognized governments, and I think it's only fair to offer that same to INGSA Corporation. So if the original sponsor of the resolution is open to moving either of them to three, I would just ask that we move both of them to three memberships.
And if I could respond, Madam Chair, to Representative Pekatek and Representative Drummond, I'm open to that, and I think it's important that there be that balance because of the odd numbers you need for the overall task force. And it always feels a little bit weird when you're trying to select sort of these numbers to represent a group of people and, you know, feel like you've done a good job. Is that really enough people to fully represent the diversity of Alaskans and that group of people? And so I think three, you know, gets us closer to doing a better job at that. So I'm comfortable with both going to three.
And Madam Co-Chair, if I might, diving into the little bit of detail between the two organizations, having sat as a tribal council member and also as a village corporation board of director, the difference is that the tribal government has an intimate relationship with the federal government, federally recognized tribes. And what that allows for is for, and it's been a while since I sat there, but it's not grants, but it allows for the federal government to pump money into, you know, whatever tribe that is represented. And so a lot of the time what you'll see is a tribal organization get a federal grant because they have that IRA in 1934 status. And then, you know, it might be for a road or something like that. And then back home, what happens is you'll see a partnership with the municipality to co-fund that road. And then a lot of the times it's a contract to the village corporation. So keeping that dollar within the community, you know, that's the system that's in place for that. And when we're talking about the economics of rural Alaska or Alaska as a whole, when it speaks to the poverty line, I think they play equal roles as far as you know, village economics, as I might say it. And then the INGSA Corporation aspect of it is that they're considered a small business, so they get a little bit of preferential treatment when it comes to the federal government contracting, and so that's the difference between the two on a very broad and 30,000 foot, I guess, definition. So,
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Hannon. Rep. Pekatek, aren't every member, and I don't know, I'm asking, the two members from a tribal government, wouldn't they also be part of the corporation? Necessarily? I mean, aren't all tribes covered under ANCSA? And so,
Representative Pekatek.
So the rules for tribal membership is that you be some kind of native, then you can be a part of that tribe and you can apply. So, for example, if you know, somebody from one of the recognized tribes in the Lower 48, a Navajo, moved up to Barrow, they can appeal to be a part of the Native Village of Barrow tribe because it's the system of federally recognized tribes. And what that does then is that as your tribal membership increases, there's a certain amount of your grant money is awarded based on tribal membership from the federal government. So not necessarily, but broadly speaking, yes. And then the regional corporations are regional or village corporations are closed stock based on your genealogy, specific to the region. So if you had a grandparent that was born before 1971, which when ANCSA was passed, and they're an original shareholder of the corporation, and then under the amendment to ANCSA in the 90s, when they allowed afterborns, which was born after December 18th, 1971, to be enrolled as shareholders, then you had to prove that my grandpa was an original shareholder I'm appealing to be a shareholder of the corporation. So, for example, my son that was just born, we sent the appropriate documents to the Native Village of Barrow to get him tribal membership, and then we then sent the documents to the regional corporation and the village corporation to prove that, you know, he's my son, I'm a shareholder, a descendant of an original shareholder, so is he. So on broad terms, yes, but there's that little caveat of the federally recognized tribes interchange that can happen there. So
thanks. Helpful.
Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you. And this is to the maker of the conceptual amendment. Was the intent to, I think I understand where this is going, but I also am not sure it aligns with the intent of the conceptual amendment. I think the my understanding was the conceptual amendment was to increase the tribal recognition, but I think where this is now heading is to just increase overall the general representation of tribal governments and native corporations on the task force, and just was hoping the maker of the conceptual amendment could address whether or not this matches her intent or if we would like to amend that conceptual amendment.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is already a pretty large task force. I don't know if any of you have ever chaired a task force or any of a working group of any sort, but to change it from 23 to 25, it's going to start getting pretty unwieldy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not the intent of my amendment. In I would almost prefer to leave it at four members from tribal governments, native corporations, or nonprofits, and let them decide what the representation should be, along with the consultation with the Speaker of the House, who is the appointing person. I feel that on the basis of how many village corporations and federally recognized tribes there are, that they need to have more representation rather than equal representation.
Representative Pakatak, any thoughts?
Yeah, actually, just thinking about it a little bit more, and I'm a little more open to the conceptual amendment now, because one of the things that I forgot here is that a lot of the IHS hospitals are compacts of village tribal governments, and so that opens up, you know, even more representation as far as the healthcare system. And I guess, frankly speaking, with that, digging up that old understanding, I'd be open to the amendment.
Taken at ease. We had a conceptual amendment proposed from Representative Drummond. Will you restate that?
Yes, Madam Chair. On line 3, change the word two to three. On line 4 of amendment number 1, change the word two to one.
And Representative Pakatak, we had an objection originally.
I remove my objection.
You remove your objection. So, amendment number 1 has been amended here in committee. So the numbers are now 3 and 1 on lines 3 and 4. Further discussion of the amendment as amended. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am not sure that the items regarding the municipality are very clear for this organization. For example, Representative McCabe and Representative Pakatak both live in boroughs. They may or may not live in a municipality or a home rule city or any of those other small governments within the borough. I live in the municipality of Anchorage, which was combined from a borough and a city in 1975 or 1976, I think. And so, and the same goes for Representative Hannon, the city and borough of Juneau, is a similar structure with a mayor and an assembly and so on and so forth. So I'm not sure that the word municipality will allow all of the various governments that are defined in statute to participate. And I would say that the sponsor of the bill might have some thoughts about that.
Yeah, and let me just interject to make sure that we are all reading that the original bill is not saying you're from a municipality. It says you work for, you work in the municipal government, and then it defines the size of it. So we got two categories, right? So, because that's one of the things I think that helps clear it up. There are a lot of people who live outside of municipal governments, but these two appointees, well, four, would be people who work for municipal governments, and I think that narrows the definition, right? So you've got to have a municipal government to be working for a municipal government, and you might live out Kinnick Bay outside of one, but you work for the municipality of Anchorage. You're one of those commuters in. Representative Tarr, did you have an understanding of that language to address Representative Drummond's concern?
Well, let me just read this definition once more, because I thought it was included here. Municipality means a political subdivision incorporated under the laws of the state that is a home rule or general law city, a home rule or general law borough, which I think would cover the boroughs that were just mentioned, or a unified municipality. The circumstance I was less clear about was the one that Representative McCabe brought up. But again, in this one, thank you for reminding me, the purpose here are people involved with the service delivery. And that's the, you know, sort of role they would play in this task force. And again, trying to look at how we do that and figure out how to do it more effectively with better outcomes and hopefully, you know, eventually less cost then.
Representative McCarty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you bring up a good question of wordsmithing in the word that exists on line 19. Two members who work in municipal government is stating that they work within the municipal government or they work for the municipal government.
Representative Shragi.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's actually a distinction there. I think just the plain reading of it makes it clear that you work for a government, but that's just my two cents, and I'm not a lawyer.
Madam Chair, I think that is true. I think, you know, there's sort of the same interpretation with either word, and we could definitely double check that, but I don't think that I'm seeing any issue.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what's the intent? Maybe Representative Tarr. I mean, I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to access somebody that works in a service level of the government that would be able to help provide information to this task force on sort of what they do to help out, right?
Yes, through the chair to Representative McCabe, exactly. You know, in our municipal government, for example, there's plenty of healthcare programs, childcare delivery, those people that are knowledgeable about the program delivery and what's working, what's not working, sort of the need, the unmet need, those type of folks.
Thank you. For instance, here in the city and borough of Juneau, we have a full-time municipal officer whose job title includes homelessness coordinator. Mm-hmm. It's not his only task, but it would seem to me that he would be a fine member of a task force representing a municipal government over 15,000, dealing with people who are living in poverty and have some insight into that. Mm-hmm. Not sure that he wants me to nominate him, but Representative McCarty.
Madam Chair, and what I want to have clarity on is kind of the I don't know if it's a structure, but dynamics within the villages, tribes, and the elders. Does it mean that every elder works for the municipal government? So if an elder is highly esteemed in their wisdom, to add to this, are they excluded because they don't work for a municipal government? Where do those, and does it even fit into this concept?
Representative Tarr, I'm going to ask you to
Represented through the chair to Representative McCarty, if I'm understanding a question, there is on number 11 one member representing senior citizens and elders, and it's not specific to an organization or anything. And again, you know, it was already a large number, so that's why it's only one for that particular sort of sector or group of individuals, group of Alaskans, but that is a separate one from numbers 9 and 10.
And Madam Co-Chair, I'm just thinking here, and I'm not offering an amendment to the amendment yet, but perhaps on amendment number 1 going down to line 10 and 13, instead of not from the same municipality, I'm thinking maybe we, based on the discussion, not representing the same municipality might be better language, just because from inclines that they're living within that municipality, whereas we've clarified that it's based on working in within the municipality.
So would you like to offer that amendment to your amendment that's been amended? I just wanted to use that three times.
I move amendment number 1 to amendment number 1.
We need to vote on.
Replacing the word from with representing in lines 10 and 13.
Is there any objection? And we'll just repeat that what we are attempting to do is clarify that on page 4, where we are delineating members of the task force, and there has been some both on the record and Addie's conversations of working for municipal governments, and we want it to be clear that these are people who work in this, work for a municipal government, so representing. So no one can interpret it just you live there, but you are employed by and designated as their members on the task force. All right. And seeing no objection, we're going to consider those amendments incorporated into the original Amendment 1. Further discussion on Amendment 1 as amended. All right.
Amendment 2.
Well, we gotta resolve this one, so let me just finish up my chairing. So, no objection. There's no more discussion. Does the objection, is it maintained to Amendment 1?
I think you objected.
Yeah.
2.
Okay. I'll remove my objection. Amendment 1 has now been amended and incorporated. Amendment number 2.
I move amendment number 2.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
And I'll defer to the resolution sponsor.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair and Mr. Co-Chair. I originally had thought of doing this as a House joint resolution, but then we decided to do it as a simple House resolution because we thought we might be able to work on it this session and get this group working and kind of the dynamics of the progress here, if you will. And so this just changes it to be two members from the House instead of one from the House and one from the Senate. And it's light on the number of legislators participating in it right now, and I don't know if people have thoughts about that. And we talked a lot about that, about whether we thought there were, you know, 4 or 6 people who wanted to, participate, had the time. This would be sort of the officially, placed individuals, but it wouldn't prevent any legislators from attending meetings. When we did the Aaron's Law Task Force, I was not an official member, but I attended every task force meeting because I was just, really interested in the implementation of that bill. So we kept it light, but I wanted to just share that in case people wondered why it was just a couple.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative McCarty.
Madam Chair, I actually like the content that exists now to keep it as. It means that there's a representative from both bodies involved in this process.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I don't believe the speaker can appoint a member from the other body, and so that's why, as a simple House resolution, we need to just have members from the House.
Is Any follow-up?
Follow-up, so this resolution is not even going to this other body to consider it. Okay.
So, Representative Tarr, could I summarize that if your resolution passes from this committee and is adopted on the floor, it is a House task force on poverty versus a legislative task force?
Yes. And Madam Co-Chair, again, we kind of considered all of the options, but we're right in this, like, very critical time for figuring out some fiscal future. And, you know, this is a big part of it. A big part of our budget goes to service delivery, a social safety net and service delivery. And, you know, just want to be timely with this work. And that's really why we kind of went in that direction. I will say I did reach out to the Senate president prior to introduction and just tried to have a conversation and gauge interest out of that body, that membership. And, you know, after a couple of weeks of not hearing back, we just wanted to move forward.
Representative Drummond, were you seeking the floor?
Actually,
go ahead.
I just have a question. I think the question's been answered. So this House resolution stops in the House. Mm-hmm. Once we pass it in the House, that's it. Does the governor sign it? It doesn't even go to the governor. Mm-hmm. So this is the House speaking to itself that we want this task force mm-hmm. to be formed. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you,
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, to David for reminding me. The materials, if mm-hmm. you'll notice at the end, are delivered to the Senate as well as to the House. So mm-hmm. whatever work product is intended to be shared with all members of the legislature. And because the membership of the legislators is pretty light, I felt more comfortable moving forward, that this is more, you know, the benefit for all of us is bringing together sort of all these experts that can, you know, kind of help us understand things in a way we don't, because we don't have their jobs.
Representative McCarty.
Through the chair, so if we look at what you're suggesting with the two representatives from the House, mm-hmm. is there some differentiation of the poverty areas that they're representing? So it's one from an urban area and one from a rural area?
Representative Tarr.
Madam Co-Chair, through the chair to Representative McCarty, that's such a great question. We talked about more, should we say one majority, one minority, and we wanted to just leave it open for any interested member of the House. But it may be improved by saying one rural, one urban. I think that, you know, would help with representation, certainly on this issue. So if that's, you know, something you want to offer as a friendly conceptual amendment, I'm open to that.
I'm open to that idea. And the question then is, what represents urban? You know, you have some numbers in here. I think Representative McKee brought up of 17,000 people in a certain area. Is that urban or rural? You know, what is urban?
Representative Tarr, you want to try?
It's interesting. I think we think of coastal Alaska and then sort of the four rural representatives as being more the rural parts of the state, and then interior and south central and southeast, I guess, is kind of how I think of it. But I don't know if I'm trying to think of a way that you would delineate it, because as representatives, we all have an equal number of constituents, roughly equal number of constituents. So it's more geographical, I think, when we think of it as sort of coastal and rural versus some population-based, because we each have the same, you know, roughly the same number of constituents. So I don't have a good definition just here on the spot to think of that, but I would be curious what others might think of that, or how to, if that would be an important distinction for the membership.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The municipality of Anchorage has 15 or 16 House representatives, or 15 and a quarter, or I'm not sure how it exactly breaks out, but that's representing 330,000 people in an area that comprises a fraction of 1% of the state's landmass, while Representative Pakpatak's 17,500 or 18,000 people sweep from Kotzebue to the Canadian border, and I know that there's a comparable to some state, the landmass of some state, and I would say that that qualifies as rural as opposed to the urban districts of Anchorage and Juneau and downtown Fairbanks. So I think adding the words one from a rural district and one from a an urban district is a fair characterization of the differences, one of the differences amongst our districts.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Shragi first, then Representative Pocket.
Well, I was just going to say, or thank you, Chair, Co-Chair Hannon. I agree with the comments of Representative Drummond. Another distinction might be a rail belt community is one way to maybe delineate the different areas of the state. Whatever the committee is comfortable with, I'm comfortable with.
Representative Pocket.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Another, I guess, filtration device we can use is the state of Alaska through DCCED produces economic opportunity zones. And looking at the map, it's pretty well balanced. And if we just said a representative representing an equal opportunity zone and one that's not, it seems that it might balance it. And I'm just offering that as another way that we can differentiate between the two, not saying that that should be the solution necessarily.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It seems to me we're kind of getting in the weeds here with the minutia. I think there's enough diversity in the other descriptions and the other sort of sideboards that we have on all the other members. And I think it would probably be more important just to have a representative from the House of Representatives that was actually interested in being on this committee and solving the problems than trying to sort of put us all in some sort of box and then maybe have somebody from the box that wasn't as interested as somebody from outside the box on it. So I think our diversity in this description is really, really good. And I think we should leave it at that and just leave it for a member that's interested. Doesn't matter if it's a member from Anchorage. If you're interested in resolving the problems, then you're interested in resolving the problems, and you have enough people on here to handle any questions from different areas.
Thank you for pulling us out of the rabbit hole.
Representative Shragi.
Oh, I was actually just going to say, Representative McCabe took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, I think the most important thing when it comes to a task force is just having members that are actively engaged and interested in serving. So I think that's the most important thing. I worry a little bit about putting the sideboards up too much around these different positions to where we're forced to find someone as opposed to being able to take on any and all willing and active participants.
And I'm going to just chime in on the same and sort of describe. So my district is half urban and half rural. I represent urban Juneau, but then outlying communities, including second-class community and an unincorporated community. But I looked at this as thinking we don't want to define the two members from the legislative body because, for instance, let's say I got the president of Sea Alaska Native Corporation was appointed and the Tlingit Haida president of the Tlingit Haida Unified Central Tribes representing 75 tribes here in Southeast. The region has good representation, and perhaps even if I were the other one, it could be looked at as going, wait a second, the legislator were looking to balance this out and have diversity of statewide interests. But fundamentally, it's got to be in legislators who are interested in working with this task force to come up with some policy recommendations. But it is up to this body to decide whether we want to delve into more specificity or if we have now talked ourselves into we're good.
Madam Co-Chair, if I could add one thing, what's very funny about this conversation to me is that I mentioned attending the meetings of the Aaron's Law Task Force. I was not an appointed member. There were appointed members, and I'm not trying to, you know, I won't say who they were, but it was, you know, people didn't attend the meetings. People who were appointed actually didn't attend the meetings. And I think I was just more interested because it was something I'd worked on. So I think there is a lot of relevance to that. And again, that was why when we thought, do we need to have four or six or is two enough? We thought, you know, again, if people are interested, there'd be no reason they don't, you know, don't have to attend. But people have so many commitments outside of their work in the legislature. And, you know, we just thought, okay, let's find two people that really do want to be a part of this. And I would be sensitive to representation of, you know, hopefully there would be two people from sort of different areas or something that were interested, because I think that would add value.
And let me also draw members' attention that this task force has a fairly short shelf life. It is an 18-month task force with deliverables in December of 2022, which, you know, we're thinking about our current fiscal year, and sometimes we forget, but 1 year out to get 23 people appointed, organized, meet, and come up with policy recommendations is actually a fairly short time frame. Mm-hmm. Representative McCarty.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative Tari, in this discussion, you brought up the whatever discussion also to consider maybe one is from the majority, one from the minority to fill this two people from the House. I'm good with that idea as well.
And Madam Co-Chair, I'm open to that as well. And again, it was as we sort of looked at the list of who might be interested, you know, I just wasn't really sure. And I'm sorry, you know, with so many new people, frankly, I haven't gotten to know people well enough to kind of know, you know, if there'd be somebody interested. And so that's why, again, we left it as just two members. And, you know, I just, again, don't want to get us in the situation of what Representative McCabe said, where it's like we just have to arbitrarily check off a box of, you know, this person, that person, and, you know, they're otherwise like semi-interested. You know, I was just hoping it would just be two really interested people, regardless of which caucus or, you know, party or whatever they were from.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. And while I appreciate Representative McCarty's attempt to be all inclusive, poverty really doesn't have any politics associated with it. And I think that we need to be above that. I think this board that Rep. Tarr has put together is pretty diverse. And do you really think it's necessary to have a minority majority? I don't know if that's, to me it's more interested to have two people on there that are really interested in resolving the problems that they find in coming up with the deliverables. And so I'm not so sure that politics enters into it for me. Thanks.
I'm happy to make that conceptual amendment to this, to have a majority-minority.
Okay, so you're going to use your magic words and move to change.
So Madam Chair, I would make a conceptual amendment to amendment number two, so it would be amendment one to amendment two. Of on line
four,
on page four, line 14. That the two members from the House of Representatives, one being from the majority and one being from the minority.
Object.
Representative Drummond, would you like to speak to your your objection?
I hate to point it out, folks, but we have one member that is a member of neither caucus. How do we deal with that? I would prefer leaving it as we've been discussing, people who are members who are interested in solving the problem, and leave it at that, and go from there.
More discussion. Any more discussion? Representative McCarty.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, you do bring up a good point. We have a couple people that are independent. They're not taking, you know, minority or majority. So with that component there, then I'm going to withdraw this conceptual amendment.
Okay. Conceptual amendment withdrawn. That brings us back to amendment number two, which would change deleting member from the Senate and make it two members from the House And I had the original objection, and I'm about to pull my objection, so I'm just looking to make sure everybody understands and is good with that. All right, I'm going to withdraw my objection, which means we've incorporated amendment number 2. I have no more amendments that have been submitted. I don't hear any dialogue about conceptual amendments. We do have public testimony, and I've got people online. So we're going to go to public testimony. This is Representative Hannon, and I am opening public testimony on H.R. number 8. The first person we have signed up is Charles McKee. Mr. McKee, we're going to light you up and give, if you'll introduce yourself, go ahead and testify.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Charles McKee. I'm a holder in due course and a beneficiary of the McKee Trust, which is managed by, has been, and still is managed by Alaska, the state of Alaska. And this is not a remedy, and it's not. It has nothing to do with retroactive damage. I myself have been personally attacked by the state of Alaska administration in the past, and I have documentation to that effect. But I also like to point out the documentation I submitted, the written testimony part of, and one of them is titled Declaration of Affidavit of Fact and Truth, and on the bottom of each of the four pages is an affirmation of affidavit of status, and it was filed in Georgia, Lamar County, Georgia, Superior Court of Record, under court seal October the 6th, 2014. Now, it makes reference to It makes reference to John Bolivar, 1856. It makes reference to a licensing. It makes reference to the Hague Convention. You go on the third page, it makes reference on number 10, third page, 10 down, the Hague Convention. And if you go down to article, well, let's pick article 46. Family honors and rights, the lives of persons and private property, as well as religious convictions and practices, must be respected. Private property cannot be confiscated. So another individual on your committee mentioned that there's nothing political about it. Well, the psychological problem is not political. It's alleged psychopathic and narcissist. So it's a mental condition that gets... It gets woven into a group of people that cause poverty to begin with. And we have a
Mr. McKee, problem. This is that's the 2 minutes, so if you can wrap it up.
Yes, it's called injunction. Injunction by court. It's called equitable and law. And that's what this House and Senate is all about. It's public court. And you're not using these injunctions appropriately. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McKee. Our next testifier is Trevor Storrs from the Alaska Children's Trust. Mr. Storrs, go ahead and introduce yourself. You've got 2 minutes.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Trevor Storrs, President and CEO of the Alaska Children's Trust. Thanks for this opportunity to testify today on H.R. 8. Over the past decade, we have come to understand one of the most effective ways of preventing child abuse and neglect is by addressing the social determinants that foster an environment that promotes trauma and discourages building the skills necessary to manage it. A key social determinant is the family's economic well-being. Currently, Alaska is ranked 36th in the nation for child overall well-being. Specifically related to family economic well-being, we're ranked 34th. Growing up in poverty is a major barrier to healthy child development, increasing the likelihood of poor academics, cognitive and health outcomes. Poverty has a disproportionate effect on very young and those children who experience persistent poverty. In 2018, 14% of Alaska's children lived at or below 100% of the U.S. poverty level. 6% of children live in families experiencing extreme poverty, which is 50% of the federal poverty level. And in 2018, one quarter of Alaska's children lived in households with a high housing cost burden. And the pandemic has only magnified these issues. During COVID, families are struggling to keep dinner on the table and a roof over their heads. Nearly 20% of Alaskan adults living in households with children had little or no confidence in their ability to pay the next rent or mortgage payment. An average of 38% of Alaskan adults living in households with children had difficulty paying for the usual household monthly expenses. The federal poverty guidelines do not even account for costs related to health insurance, child care, and other new necessities such as internet access. Behind every statistic, there is a child going to bed with an empty belly, a single mother unable to take her child to the pediatrician, and youth who do not see a viable career without a college or trade education, which all cost money. We need to do this is address the basic structural reasons that are causing these numbers. It's very easy to write off those in poverty as people other than us or people that made the wrong life choices. Just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, like I did, people will say, but we forget is some people don't have bootstraps and others don't even have boots. H.R. 8 directs the legislature to address the systematic issues through data-driven and people-centered policy solutions to poverty and opportunity. Alaska needs to take a comprehensive approach to increase opportunities for economic mobility, provide hope, and collectively ensure all children, youth, and family in Alaska have the chance and tools they need to thrive. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Storrs. Our next is Carol Piscoya from Nome. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yes. Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and legislators, for the opportunity to speak on behalf of COERC. My name is Carol Piscoya. I am the Community Services Division Vice President at COERC. I'm a tribal member of Nome Eskimo Community, a village member of Sitnisok Native Corporation, and a member of our regional corporation, Bering Straits Native Corporation. I want to give a short overview of COERC. COERC was formed in 1973 as a regional nonprofit tribal consortium serving 19 tribes in this Bering Straits region, with a 23-member board of directors composed of representatives from each of the 20 tribes, two elder representatives, and one Norton Sound Health Corporation board member. COERC consists of five divisions: administration, education, employment supportive services, as well as cultural, regional development, and community services and natural resources, and all provide services directly to our 19 tribes. My research and data information is primarily from a Bering Straits community needs assessment completed in 2019. With additional information from Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Alaska Department of Labor, and Nome Census of 2010. On the issue of poverty and opportunity, overcrowding is a huge issue. 30% of households are overcrowded. More than half or more households live in overcrowded conditions in Savunga, Shaktulik with 60% each, and Breivik Mission with 50%, and Stebbins with 50%. In our region, except Nome, White Mountain, and Unalakleet, one quarter or more households are overcrowded. Housing is expensive. 26% of homeowners with a mortgage pay 30% or more of their income for housing. In some communities, at least half of the owners pay 30% or more toward housing costs, which is Breivik at 50% and White Mountain at 5%. Nearly all housing units in this region, 89% houses were built prior to 2000, with 45% built before 1980. We have very limited water and sewer services, incomplete or non-existing systems. Five communities, Stymie, Chishmap, Stebbins, Taylor, and Wales, do not have piped water systems. Nome, Unalakleet, Elam, and Shaktulik have complete water and sewer systems. Sanitization deficiencies indicate 11 communities have inadequate, unsafe, or no water disposal systems. Six communities operate with safety data scores for inadequate, unsafe, or no solid waste disposal system, which include Brevig, Koyuk, Zabunga Shack, Shishmash, St. Michael, and Stevens.
Ms. Poya, we've reached your two-minute mark, so if you could wrap up, but certainly if you want to submit the testimony, especially with that data in writing, we can share it with the
community. Okay.
But if you would wrap up, that would be great.
I do have a lot of more data on there, and I would really be happy to share it. So additional factors that could lead to poverty are all interconnected: housing, water, sewer, substance abuse, health impacts due to alcohol and drugs, limited economic opportunities, inadequate public safety, our education system, high turnover teachers, access to healthy foods, historical individual trauma, limited treatment for mental health, lack of cultural-based activities, climate change issues, which homes and infrastructure damage, and now this pandemic has increased many of those issues. And because of the listed the items I have listed about our region's poverty issues, CORIC Incorporated fully supports the fact-gathering task force that can assist with finding resources and solutions for our region. Again, thank you for this opportunity, and I'll be happy to send this testimony to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Piscoya. Our next to testify is Ed Martin, calling in from the Kenai.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of this committee. I read the sponsor statement for this establishing this task force on poverty and opportunity. One thing for sure, poverty hasn't, the war on poverty really hasn't done the job that Lyndon Baines Johnson enacted in by a federal law back in 64. I came to Alaska in 65 at 9 years old, and I've been a resident ever since. One of the things that has really helped significantly in bringing people out of poverty has been the permanent fund dividend. And in fact, I think there was a study done by the ICER group that said by, financially, the burden on families, and particularly those with children, actually put many out in the bush communities into the poverty line of income because of the lack of getting those permanent fund dividends. Now, I may remind all you folks that we don't even have a budget yet to take care of that. A lot of what's happening in your sponsor statement talks about COVID. It talks about, for all intents and purposes, many people having to lose their jobs. And this is typical of a government that really, at one point, they want to save us all from ourselves, yet they aren't, they don't do much to actually help us. This is one of the probably the worst wars that we've taken on, like the drug war and many others that this country has. I'm 65 years old. I am a great grandfather. I'm 66. I actually became a great grandfather before I was 65. And I've taken on, the responsibility of being a parent and taking care of my children. Now, I understand single parent. I understand many issues. But I can tell you right now, I think this committee is well worth having. But I think that we all know what you need to do. So, let's make it quick, because we're not getting any further ahead, Madam Chair and members of the committee, with this so-called war on poverty. And a lot of it we can't cure. We may think we can, but we'll never have 100% employment, and we're never going to have abuse and fraud and waste like we'd like to, do away with. So I thank you for letting me go over my time.
Thank you.
And I encourage you folks to get good people on this committee. Keep it limited. 23 people or however many you have, there's a lot of people. And I think maybe you can make it a little more efficient, because that's a lot of talking. So God bless you and your missions.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. And I'm going to just confirm that that is everyone we had signed up for public testimony. And so I'm going to close public testimony. And that brings us back to our meeting. I should put on the record that if you would like to submit written testimony, the committee email is the following words spelled out: house, H-O-U-S-E, dot community, housecommunityandregionalaffairs@akleg.gov. So that's housecommunityandregionalaffairs@akledge.gov. Representative Tarr, do you have any additional comments, or members of the committee? We'll let Representative Tarr go last. If members of the committee have other thoughts on HR 8. Seeing no one, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Mr. Co-Chair and the members of the committee for the great discussion over these two meetings, and to all the individuals that called in. I'm feeling very positive about the potential of this group and the kind of solutions they could come up with at such a critical time in our state's decision-making about our future, and I'm just really grateful for the opportunity to present to you. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Co-Chair, do I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, I move, get the number here, House Resolution 832-LS0728/B as amended. With attached individual recommendations and zero fiscal note. Thank you.
Is there any objection? All right. We are going to sign the committee work, but let me go ahead and make the announcements before we gavel out, and then we can stay for a second and sign the paperwork. We will not meet next Tuesday. You might recollect, or let me remind you, that Tuesday is a very long joint confirmation session day. And so we thought perhaps instead of starting at 8 a.m. and then going till 8 p.m. on the floor, we will not have a meeting on Tuesday. And on Thursday next week, we will hear Senate Bill 95, which is the Senate companion to House Bill 16, the search and rescue surplus bill. But the Senate one has made it over, so HB 16 is still here. We've now met up with SB 79. And we will hear SJR 8, Senator Hughes' joint resolution on broadband access in Alaska. If you have amendments to either of those, and I'll draw your attention to the search and rescue one because the two bills change slightly as they progressed. If you have amendments to SB 95, then noon on Wednesday would be the deadline. So if you want to look at that to see how it looks in comparison to HB 16, which we delved into quite at depth. Any other questions or concerns before we adjourn? Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Hannon. And just to be clear for committee members' information, we do intend to move SB 95, the search and rescue surplus state property, on that Thursday meeting, since we've already had an introductory from Representative Johnson on her House version. Members should be familiar with that bill, and I think it's appropriate to move that so that we can take action this session.
Right. And I guess we should add that it is somewhat our intention to also do that with Senator Hughes's resolution on broadband. It is attempting to look at being able to access some of the federal funds for broadband work, but it is a resolution, not a bill. With that, we are going to adjourn at 9:13.